feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's on 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for a thousand years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist, and a Baptist, and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting in Canada, he's fighting in France, he's fighting in the USA. This way, and he's fighting for democracy or fighting for the red. He says it for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, in a war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. Debate started last night, if you can call them that. Who's dumb? Who's dumber? Who's bad and who's worse? Who lies? And who lies even more? You may have your own answers to all of those questions. I do too. My answers aren't actually based on the debate, because I didn't watch it. It's bad enough I have to hear the ads anytime I make the mistake of watching TV. I certainly don't want to be subjected to an hour of that stuff. Or however long it is. I'm not even sure about the format, actually. You know, it's an interesting phrase there, subjected to it. We're all subjected to a lot of stuff. A lot of BS, a lot of lies. It feels as though nothing we do will make any real difference. It feels as though we might as well be banging our heads against a wall as continue to fight the corruption, greed, and lies that permeate government in all its aspects. We may be subjects of the state, and we may be subjected to all manner of deceit, but we must keep on hitting our heads against that wall, and not for the traditional reason that it feels so good when I stop. Not for that reason, not at all. The reason we have to keep going is that we really can make a difference. We really can. But first, we have to believe that we can. That's where their attack on us is the most insidious. They make us feel powerless. They make us feel that we can't make any difference. They make us feel that the way things are is the way things always will be. So we might as well just lie there and enjoy it. And of course, they want us to keep the baby that comes out. Oh, well, that's a different topic. The struggle between the haves and the have-nots has been going on as long as men have been alive. Well, no. It's been going on as long as anything's been alive. Have and have-not, predator and prey, amounts to the same thing, doesn't it? Somehow, if few folks have managed to get to the top of the food chain. The rest of us mostly react with that fight or flight response, sometimes choosing the right one for the situation, sometimes letting our bodies choose it for us. To really make a difference, we need to be able to make the right choice, to make a stand when there's something to gain, to stand back when it's better to wait for another day. Remember, there are more of us than there are of them. We may not be so easy to control if we just stay awake. Don't let them lull you to sleep. Don't let them keep on running their scams on you. Don't believe the lies they tell that are designed to make us hate each other. Listen instead to the truth that is inside all of us that tells us we really need to get along. We really need to love each other, not hate each other, because that's the way to victory. Here's a taste of what a very cool guy named Bill Hicks had to say about all this.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream radio show. We thank you for joining us. And now I'm going to turn it over to my friend and co-host, Mike Pelichek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome special guest Keith McHenry. I think Keith will be talking to us from Ontario, and Sherwood Ross from Coral Gables, Florida. And so tonight we are gathering together for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Ontario, Coral Gables, and wherever you are. Websites of particular note. I'd like to again mention Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett, and Gordon Duff. In particular, Kevin Barrett has something that is entitled Now It Can Be Told. This is Kevin Barrett's radio interview with Dane Wigington talking about chemtrails. Go to American Freedom Radio, the archives, Truth Jihad Radio, Monday, October 1st, for the interview with Kevin Barrett and Dane Wigington talking about chemtrails. The most interesting, valuable things to me, the truth about the JFK, RFK, MLK, Wellstone, and who is really behind the reasons we go to war, who is really behind all these mass murders and terrorist attack we have had, particularly since maybe the 1970s. And to tell you the truth, I think with the help of all the hundreds of private citizens who have spent lives working and researching these things, I think Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett, and Gordon Duff are right now, as we speak, getting us as far as we've ever come, perhaps even getting close to the end, to the truth. And the truth is not with the government and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and Peter Jennings and now those dozens of other CIA agents in the media have been telling us. The truth is actually what we have all felt in our guts, in our souls, and our hearts all these years. Okay, then I wanted to say something again about why I think all the things I think about our country and government like conspiracies. Not that it matters so much or that there's anything wrong with it, only because it might be something to talk about for a little while. This week I thought I'd say a little about protesting against the Catholic Church in Omaha, Nebraska, being on the run from the FBI, my first real reporter job at Ainsworth, Nebraska, and interviewing Leonard Peltier in Leavenworth Penitentiary. In the 1980s, Ruth and I and Sam, Ruth, my wife, Sam, our son, were part of the Greenfields Resistance Community in North Omaha. We lived with other people. We worked small construction jobs, day labor. Well, I had been in the seminary not long before that, studying for the priesthood for the Diocese of Omaha. I had written to Archbishop Daniel Sheehan asking him what he thought about the targeting of nuclear weapons by the Strategic Air Command at Offutt Air Force Base in South Omaha. He wrote back and said that the targeting of nuclear weapons, basically threatening millions of people with death and spending billions of dollars to do that, basically allowing North Omaha to live in poverty, saying it was all worth it, was okay with him and with the Catholic Church. I disagreed, and so I began to picket the chancery offices. The chancery offices are the offices of the Archbishop and all the higher-ups in the Omaha Catholic Church. I stood outside on the sidewalk with a sign that said, "The Omaha Catholic Church supports SAC. Why?" I also held the sign in front of the cathedral and then took my sign inside the chancery later. I got arrested, and once during the Archbishop's Easter sermon, I walked inside the cathedral, up to the lectern with the sign, stood next to the Archbishop while he spoke to the congregation, and turned to the congregation and held up the same sign. And once a friend, Kevin McGuire, who also lived at Greenfields, by the way, Greenfields is, and I didn't know it at the time, but he was named after the anti-war song, The Greenfields of France. And it has some lines that go, "Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside?" Well, Kevin was good to go to the federal court for an Offutt action once. And rather than appearing in court, he planned to take sanctuary in the cathedral, the Catholic Church Cathedral of Omaha, the main big huge church in Omaha for the Catholic Church. So to publicize that event, we made up leaflets and put the leaflets around town, including on the windshields of the FBI and U.S. Marshal vehicles down at the federal building. And what happened was, two mornings before Kevin was to go to court, the FBI raided Greenfields at 5 a.m. And Kevin and his family were not there. They were at some other place. Ruth and I were in Norfolk visiting my mother, and so Kevin was not taken. And he was in hiding until the court day, and he appeared at the cathedral. He was able to get inside, and the sanctuary action proceeded as planned, with the FBI watching the church and the local media interviewing Kevin inside the cathedral during the day. Kevin eventually went to federal prison for the action, and about a year later, I tried the same thing. And as I was sitting inside the cathedral waiting to be arrested, I decided that I would not let them just take me into custody. It was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. So while a friend gave a diversionary press briefing on the front steps of the cathedral, I slipped out a side door by putting a hoodie on, you know, just a hoodie, and tying the string up tight. And there was a garbage sack, cathedral garbage, so I just put it over my back and tried to look like I was just taking out the church garbage. I got into a car left by in the parking lot by my wife, and I got away. And I stayed for a while at a cabin by the river provided by an Omaha priest, and for a while in a room provided me by a religious order in downtown Omaha. And the head of the FBI, Omaha FBI office at that time, was Nick O'Hara. He was interviewed the next day after my escape from the cathedral by the Omaha World Herald, and he said something about my being underground to Charles Starkweather, the serial killer, which I still haven't been able to figure out. Anyway, Ruth and Sam and I were on the run for about 2 weeks. I stayed at a few different places in Omaha, and then for a while at Ruth's parents' farm in South Dakota. And I turned myself in at a press conference in front of the chancery offices back in Omaha, and then went to prison. That's probably enough for now about that. Next week I'll go into the talk about the leaving the peace movement to save the world through journalism. And my first newspaper job was in the Nebraska Sandhills. It was during the time of the first Gulf War. And later I interviewed Leonard Peltier in Leavenworth. I'll say a little bit about that next week. And also, while I was researching the Peltier case, I was Nick O'Hara, the same FBI agent who was in Omaha, had been transferred to head the Midwest FBI office in Minneapolis. And since he had since that was all tied up together, the FBI and Peltier and the and Wounded Knee, I went up to, as part of my, I assigned myself to go up to Minneapolis to interview O'Hara. And anyway, I'll talk about that a little more next week. Okay, back to you, Chuck.
Well, now we bring you the New American Dream Masterpiece Classic Playhouse Theater something something.
Real voices.
With a message you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News. Mike Prisoner, Iraq War veteran. The real enemies are not in some distant land. They're not people whose names we don't know and cultures we don't understand. The enemy is people we know very well and can identify. The enemy is a system that wages war when it is profitable. The enemy is the CEOs who lay us off from our jobs when it is profitable. The insurance companies who deny us health care when it is profitable. The banks who take away our homes when it is profitable. Our enemy is not 5,000 miles away. They're right here at home. And if we organize with our sisters and brothers, we can stop this war, we can stop this government, and we can create a better world.
And now we hear the voice of Philip F. Nelson, author of LBJ, The Mastermind of JFK's Assassination.
The man should be known for what he was, a world-class criminal. A thorough cleansing of the national conscience is in order, after all of these years, to enable Americans to reconcile the personal tragedy suffered by John F. Kennedy, the national tragedy suffered by the country at large, at the hands of Lyndon B. Johnson. Until the real story of the 36th president is exposed and the complete truth of his crimes against the United States and the world are acknowledged, there will always be questions lurking about the trustworthiness of the government itself.
And finally, the voice of William Pepper, attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, now attempting to be released from prison for the 1968 murder of Robert Kennedy, on grounds that Sirhan was programmed to be a patsy and a decoy for the real killers in the Ambassador Hotel pantry that hot summer night.
The American people have been called by numbers of people all over the world as being the most dumbed-down population in Western civilization. Certainly, they're probably among the least politically and other ways sophisticated people in Western culture. That's no accident. And it's no testimony to the lack of intelligence and potential of the citizens of this republic. To testimony to the control and thinking and the flow of information that people are allowed to have. The effects of the media and the thought control that has been developed in this country is extraordinary, and it's very difficult to overcome. One wonders how long it's going to take for the uprising to occur. I actually think we may be reaching a point where we're entering a pre-revolutionary stage.
And now I'd like to welcome our first guest, Keith McHenry. Keith has been our guest a number of times. Keith is, among other things, he's the founder of Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs is an international organization that does what it says by title. It provides food to hungry people and also protests against the spending of money on bombs instead of for human needs. Keith, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
How you doing?
Fantastic.
How you doing?
Good. It's been great. It's been an amazing few weeks. We're getting like so many groups starting, and particularly in unusual places like Tbilisi, Georgia, and Singapore has been emailing us a lot about what they're doing, and big effort between Iran, groups in Iran and Israel. So it's pretty exciting.
Are you, you're in Ontario tonight? Is that right?
Not yet. I'm over in Buffalo. I have to meet some people here, and then I speak tomorrow morning at Brock College in St. Catharines, and then that evening at the Unitarian Church in St. Catharines, Ontario. And that starts like a two-week tour of mostly Ontario and also Montreal. So it should be pretty interesting.
Is there a theme to your tour? Are you just visiting Food Not Bombs organizations, or is there some other central theme to what you're doing right now?
Well, what it's called is the name of the tour is the Elect to End Hunger and Poverty Tour. And so essentially we're seeing in particularly the U.S. election, but even in Canada and other parts of the world, like even Mexico, which is where I'll go in December, the debate is not really about how to alleviate poverty. And there's literally only, like in the debate yesterday between Romney and Obama, there was only really one reference to poverty, which Romney had claimed the statistics 1 in 6 Americans were living in poverty, but the actual census says that it's 1 in 2 Americans are living in poverty. So his facts in that case were not accurate. But by and large, there's no discussion in the election or in, even in much of a public debate, the fact that there are all these abandoned houses in the country due to the foreclosure crisis, and at the same time, there's all these people living on the streets. And, and they're just this issue is essentially being ignored, and there's no proposals in these elections to come up with any kind of solution to that. It's just kind of more of the same, let the banks do what they're doing, maybe slightly tweak regulations. But there's no, actual fundamental addressing of this crisis or the other impending crises that are interconnected, like food prices that are going sky high. And there's predictions by World Food Organization and Oxfam that there will be a doubling of food prices, and speculation isn't driving up the prices of food. But also climate change is playing a huge role. And you just don't see anybody in the elections talking about it. So that's why the name Elect to End Hunger and Poverty is a theme of the tour. And I've been on it since I actually started speaking even on this tour last year. And this is the final semester of it. And then I will go about speaking about Food Not Bombs in a different way and trying to organize groups in at the beginning of the new year, and highlight probably what is what could be a huge disaster in the making. Who knows what it would be? A war with Iran, the country plunging into even more economic crisis than it already is. I'm sure there'll be something that Food Not Bombs needs to do after the election to address the crises that are occurring.
I think the whole election, the debate, the whole world could be different, just depending on who was sitting in that chair last night instead of Jim Lehrer asking the questions. If you were sitting in that chair, Keith, what would you like to have asked Obama and Romney?
Well, I would have asked them, first of all, what they were going to do immediately about addressing the issue of climate change, because that definitely is an emergency of such major proportions that even something like the Manhattan Project in World War II or something like that isn't nearly bold enough to deal with what's happening. I'm a gardener. I grow food in Taos, New Mexico. I see, and gardeners everywhere and farmers are very in tune with how dire that crisis is. And that crisis is core to many things, including poverty, including it playing a role in what became the Arab Spring and so on. And if you're trying to alleviate hunger and poverty, as Food Not Bombs is doing, that is really an important issue to address. And that's actually something the Pentagon is talking about in regards to future wars. that they are preparing for, and their future wars over the issue that people will be struggling just to survive because of the crisis of the climate change. So that's the one thing that should be number one on the national agenda right now, and we're the one of the largest, if not the largest country, or have the most responsibility for the crisis that is existing. And then, of course, the another would be how to bring all the millions of Americans off the streets and into this housing that's abandoned by the banks. And why aren't these bankers going to prison when the homeless are going to prison for merely things like having two-thirds of their body horizontal in a public space, which is illegal in many cities, or standing within so many feet of a parking meter or automatic teller machine, another crime that people are commonly put in jail for. And, you know, we have the one in two people on Earth that are in prison or in prison in the United States, and a huge number of these people are just simply jailed and become prisoners for long term over what people call paperwork problems in the things like probation violations, stuff like that. Not even actual events as pathetic as standing too close to an automatic teller machine. That just stuff that evolves because of our system into massive incarceration. And then, of course, you have the issues of things like GMOs and ethanol, corn for ethanol and all this, which is further threatening not only hunger in the United States, but globally, and destabilizing global economies. So those are some things. Also, like, why are we involved in threatening Iran and Syria? What are these people going to do about de-escalating these wars? Do they have any plans to avoid a world war? You know, every day you just wonder when the next, you know, event in Syria is going to draw in all these, like, Russia and China into a conflict with the U.S., Israel, and NATO. And you don't. There was no conversation about that or the other obvious thing, which is 50 cents for every tax dollar is going to war. And while we have people living in our streets, is that really security? So those are some of the things I would have asked about.
You know, a lot of times the people who are sitting at home are kind of despair over the how things are going, and the people who are out doing stuff seem to have more hope, and that's what you're doing. You're out there talking to people. How does getting out there and speaking to groups and to getting feedback, how does that how do you see that? Is there hope out there, and does that inspire you?
Well, it does. I mean, a lot of people, you know, people come to my presentations, even with, you know, the fact that it's such a grassroots effort, because they are interested in actually trying to do something. And as a result, once they start doing things like Food Not Bombs, it totally transforms their lives. Because on the one hand, you are talking directly to people that need food, and therefore you have that satisfaction of actually, you know, having a practical impact on people's lives. But the other thing is you're creating dialogue on the street, and you find very quickly when you're at a Food Not Bombs table handing out the food and talking about these issues that there is a lot of support for changing things. So we get this impression in the media, you know, mainstream media, that, oh, no one really cares about this, it's just not important, you know, everybody is kind of a sheep. And the reality is that young people particularly, which is where I focus, where I go to speak on campuses, are super excited to actually try to make a difference and try to do something. And people are really very smart. They have a lot of great ideas and are willing to be really dedicated and to take a lot of the risk and time to try to change things. So it's really heartening. I mean, I had a long conversation yesterday with a woman that does starting the Food Not Bombs with her friends in Somalia, and it's very desperate, but they feel like now the war in Mogadishu seems to have subsided some, so they can actually go out and feed people. And they're really excited about that. They have a relationship with Ethiopia Food Not Bombs, which has been, you know, they've been sharing food every week now for several months without missing, which is a huge thing to do in a in an African country, and they've now made alliances with the Somalia activists. And it's just very inspiring, because in the face of really huge odds, people are really struggling to do make a difference, and they really are. And one of the groups working like with Unabombs in Somalia just called Somalia Peace, and they really see that there is at the root of the solution to ending hunger in places like Africa, just like it is here, is an end of this violence that, and an end to organizing society the way it's currently organized, you know, and that's at the root of it. And, you know, so it's really exciting that this is happening. And I think the people that do spend the time doing it, they have a lot more hope. It must be so depressing to think that, you know, that there is just these leaders like we saw on TV, the people happened to have watched that yesterday, and just how they really were inept. They don't really have a direction. You know, and if you thought that we had to depend on them for change, we would be in real trouble, and I could see how that would be quite depressing.
Keith, thank you for being with us tonight. And in closing, could you just give us a few details of the next couple stops on your tour, where you'll be tomorrow and maybe the next couple days?
Yeah, so you can actually see in detail where I'm going, and that's at foodnotbombs.net, and it's called, the very top link is the Electan Hunger and Poverty Tour, and we do have more openings for presentations, so any listeners want to bring me to your town, you can kind of see where I'll be near where you are, and I can I'd be happy to set something up with you. And what is really exciting is in the last week I started receiving emails from communities throughout Ontario that had no idea I would be speaking in Ontario, but who were saying that they were just starting new chapters. So Barrie, Ontario, and Sudbury in the last 3-4 days asked to be listed on their websites. And so I've just added them as two more places to speak. And it's pretty exciting that there's all this happening. On the other hand, part of the reason there's so much interest in starting Food Not Bombs in Ontario is the federal government is starting a very Reagan like series of policies, and in both Sudbury and in Barrie they have started laws that are actually mimicked from the United States to make it illegal to be homeless, and the young people were just astounded that was happening, and got their friends together to organize a local Food on Bombs to push back. And this is a worrying trend that this would happen in Canada, because this is very new that they would be trying to criminalize homelessness. Since they have things like more like national health care and stuff, they usually really alleviate those problems, but apparently they're taking a harsh approach. And so that's what I'll be doing. And I will be going all the way down into, I'll be going along the East Coast, down into Florida. I'll be speaking in the Midwest and at the Food Not Bombs gathering in St. Louis in November, and then going down to Mexico in December. And so you can follow that. And if you want to start a Food Not Bombs, there's plenty of resources, and we'd be happy to help you out. And that's the basic goal of the tour, is to encourage people to take action, start their own chapters, get more volunteers for existing chapters, and really do what they can to make a difference.
Well, thank you very much, Keith, and keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you in a couple months, I suppose.
Yeah, you do the well, thanks. Okay, bye-bye. Take care,
all right,
everyone.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Mitch McGillicuddy Schwarzenegger. Tonight on Interview with a Terrorist, we're joined in our studio by someone shrouded in mystery, rarely seen. Our guest is seated across from me at this moment in the shadows with the curtains closed. I cannot see his face, though I can tell he's wearing cowboy boots and he's recently eaten at Long John Silver's. Our guest, we'll simply call him Mr. Terrorist for the purposes of our conversation this evening. He's agreed to the interview just so long as the curtains are closed and he gets a cushy chair. We disguise his voice, and afterwards, nobody follows him to ask for autographs or offer to pay for his dinner and drink. So
he has hinted he'd by that time be far too tired to argue about it for too long. Before we begin, let me tell you, you'll be able to hear the voice of Mr. Terrorist just fine as if he's seated in your living room like the Allstate Insurance salesman that he was before he became the congressman from Branson. Well, in fact, our garbling machine is broken, or we can't find it. Actually, we doubt such a thing exists, maybe in some Harry Potter alternative universe. So we've asked Mr. Terrorist to garble his words as he speaks. And then, thanks to the 7-second delay, which does exist, our technicians will be able to run those words through the washer, and you'll hear the real voice of Mr. Terrorist. All very complicated, but beyond your imagination. Just trust us. Call it willing suspension of disbelief, if that helps. You'll not be able to know who he is and all that, so let's proceed, shall we? Good evening, Mr. Terrorist.
Yes.
Well then, how did you get into this country in the first place?
I came with my grandparents.
In a sack? In a bag?
A bag, I believe.
Paper or plastic?
I believe all they had back then was paper. I'm not really for certain. If you want, I can do some research on that and get back to you when I get back to my office.
Oh, yes, that would be helpful. And so, Mr. Terrorist, you've been involved in extensive operations within the United States and also around the world. Your cell, as it were, your group, your colleagues, not to legitimize you beyond all recognition, have pretty well operated with impunity for decades, causing wars, taking part in wars, taking part in the overthrows of the governments of other countries. How is it you managed to pull all that off and to move around freely, as it seems? It must be an elaborate infrastructure, web, network.
I'm afraid I'm being called away to another meeting. If you will leave your name with my office, I will get right back to you.
But, Mr. Terrorist, we've only just begun. Please, stay with us a moment more. Please leave your microphone where... please, just one more question, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes?
Who exactly is it that you represent in the United States Congress? Who are your actual constituents? We've heard reports that anyone wanting to contact you from Branson or the surrounding communities, Hollister, Indian Point, are not able to get in touch with you. One little old lady in Table Rock once was on hold waiting to discuss funding for the local high school district rather than a new state prison for 2 years. 2 years. Can you imagine? She was eventually found by her neighbors when she didn't show up for the triannual Finnish folk fiddle festival. While we have you here, Mr. Terrorist, please, sir. It appears we've lost Mr. Terrorist. If you're in the neighborhood of our studios, perhaps you can catch a glimpse of him. Oh, yes, there he goes. I see him now. He's running it. He's gone. Disappeared. Disapparated, if you will, into the night. Thin air. Simply amazing. Well, then, please join us next time on Interview with a Terrorist, when we'll be visiting with the Dancing Israelis. Thank you for tuning in. Have a pleasant night and an awesome tomorrow. Wishing you a happy time in America. This is your host, Mitch McGillicuddy Schwarzenegger.
Funding for tonight's program is provided in part by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, a global force for good, the United States Army, Be All You Can Be, the United States Air Force, Peace Is Our Profession, and the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave, because we could never sell you the truth. And also by your local down home, just like you, we're all in this together for mom, for pie, for baseball, and for Chevrolet military recruiter. Stop on in now and talk about who you want to kill most of all, and we'll sign some papers and get you started on your programming, turning you from who you are now into a real American who can kill.
and also by the good folks at Shop and Plop, indoor porta potties for the busy Christmas shopper. We know soon you'll be on the run all day long, round and round, buying stuff to keep your favorite Americans happy, but sooner or later, you're going to need a pit stop. Why not Shop and Plop? Shop and Plop. Take some time out to sit in your own little world, inches from the hurried masses around you, brushing against the wall while you hold on tight. You hear their conversations, who's a bitch and who shot what. While you search in the dark for the paper roll, you hold on to both walls, wondering if some teenage swarm might decide to tip you over. You reach out your foot to touch all your expensive, hard-won packages to make sure your whole day, your whole life was not wasted. You smile, it's all good. And then you hear the satisfying plop in the communal goo, and you are ready to continue, to push on, to persevere in your pursuit of the American dream. You emerge refreshed and victorious to join your fellow Americans, some standing in line glaring at you, some rushing past brandishing razor-sharp elbows, and you smile, and for a moment you pause to adjust those heavy bags cutting into your arms, and you nod knowingly, now realizing for perhaps the first time with such clarity why we killed those millions of Indians and those millions of Iraqi children and all those poor people in Afghanistan. You step down as a lady from a throne as the next person takes your hand to allow you to set your blistered foot once again onto the mall tile floor. You gracefully bend your leg to pull the paper from your shoe and you smile at the waiting line as a movie star to her adoring fans. Shop and Plop, it's the American way to go. Look for the handy blue and yellow plastic huts in the middle of the mall. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Remember the night of the Clinton inaugural balls, the singing, the dancing, the smiling, the dreams, the hopes? Remember how they gave up on health care? Remember the omnibus crime bill, the construction of dozens of new prisons? Remember the bombing of Yugoslavia for 70 days? Remember the Welfare Reform Act, the end of ADC, NAFTA, the end of jobs in America? Do you remember the pardon of Leonard Peltier? Drug running by the CIA in Mena, Arkansas. Gary Webb reports about that in the Mercury News, and later he's murdered. The sanctions on Iraq that killed 1 million people. The reversal of Glass-Steagall, which is all about the 99% and the 1% in today's headlines. I won't ask, and please don't tell me if you voted for William Jefferson Clinton. Hope, change, elect Barack Obama. Remember the Democratic Party? John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy. We thought everything was possible, probable. And then they blew it all away. Clinton and Obama got the message, wouldn't you say? Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Well, I believe in yesterday.
And now, I take pride in introducing our second guest, Sherwood Ross. He's a regular columnist with us, and he really needs no introduction. Sherwood, are you there?
Well, yes, I'm here, and I was delighted by the last 10 minutes that I've been listening in.
Well, good.
Very funny, very funny and very poignant.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
Speaking of terrorists, we need to have a new way to look at NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It was formed back in 1949 by the U.S. and its Western European buddies to respond militarily to any Soviet attack against one of its members. 6 years later, the Russians, in response, organized the Warsaw Pact as a counterforce. And a costly armed stalemate results with these two militaries staring across the borders at each other. Until the Berlin Wall came down in November 1989, the tension of the Cold War years diminished. Europe's borders reopened from the Baltic south to the Aegean, and people flowed freely once again. Meanwhile, Gdansk shipyard workers scored a triumph of nonviolence. With their trade union brothers and sisters, they overturned the communist rulers of Poland, and the revolt spread to Soviet Russia itself. It looked like a new era of peace was on the way. The Warsaw Pact went out of business in 1991. There was no longer any threat of Soviet tanks rolling west as they had, invading Hungary and Czechoslovakia. Only a funny thing happened on the road to detente. NATO did not disband. The Russians reduced the size of their military, shut down their germ warfare ops, but the Pentagon expanded its operation. While Moscow indicated it was tired of war, Pentagon budgets grew and kept growing, so that now it spends more for war than all 50 states of the United States put together spend for peace. I repeat, the Pentagon is spending more for war and destruction than all 50 states spend for peace. After all, the Pentagon's grabbing 53 cents of every dollar you pay in taxes, so what do you expect? Meanwhile, NATO has morphed into a dangerous threat to world peace. It's undermining the United Nations. Well, that's not my conclusion. I'm not an authority on the UN, but that's the opinion of a former Assistant Secretary General of the UN, Dennis Halliday, who held that post for 5 years. In a foreword to a new book from Clarity Press titled The Globalization of NATO, Halliday writes that NATO is being expanded by American and British ambitions. And get this, it's being expanded into what he calls a monster military force of world proportion. Halliday calls NATO a redundant, extravagant, unwelcome military toy that gobbles up human and financial resources to no positive end. It's nothing but a negative force. More damning still, Halliday goes on to charge that NATO is threatening sovereign states like Iran with the horror of nuclear weapons, and that it is attempting to surround Iran and Russia and China. Well, you wonder what's behind it all, and Halliday says NATO has no interest in peace, but that warfare is a profitable business, and the military arms industry keeps entire economies afloat. He says peace would put NATO out of its rewarding, killing business. So far from responding to an attack against one of its members, none of whom have been attacked, NATO instead attacks Libya in March of last year. According to the book, The Globalization of NATO, by the time NATO started that war, it was already conducting military operations in the Atlantic, the Arctic, in the Indian Oceans, in the Mediterranean, and on the Red Seas, and in the Gulf of Aden, and on four continents, in countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Somalia, Sudan, and the former Yugoslavia. And if those countries had anything in common, it's this. None of them threatened a single European NATO country, which was NATO's reason for coming into being in the first place. The author of this new book, The Globalization of NATO, is Canadian sociologist Mahdi Nazemroya, an award-winning journalist. He says the U.S. and NATO have lowered a new iron curtain to castrate and contain Russia. He says the U.S. and NATO have literally authorized themselves to go to war anywhere in the world. And that includes securing all the energy sources on the planet and taking control of them, even if they have to use nuclear weapons in conventional wars. And he says this has paved the way for preemptive nuclear strikes against Russia, China, and Iran. Of course, it may seem probable to Americans that the U.S. would use atomic bombs on Iran. And should we consider that the Pentagon has used radioactive ammunition in its wars in Kuwait and Iraq? Hospitals in Iraq have numerous cases of infants stillborn or born with hideous birth defects as a result of Pentagon military actions. Author Nazim Roya charges that in response to Pentagon adventurism, Russia is rearming itself with nuclear weapons because Moscow believes its old nukes are all that stood in the way of U.S. attempts to pummel it during the Cold War. And so this may explain why Russia is negotiating with Cuba to reopen a naval base on that island country. Now, how about that? The Moscow-Havana talks are about Russia opening a so-called supply base on the island, but they recall the frightening Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, when Soviet attempts to place nuclear missiles on the island led to a dangerous confrontation with the U.S. What's more, Nazim Roya says, Russia's new nuclear navy will give it a floating base, many floating bases that can roam the world, much as the Pentagon now operates nearly a dozen nuclear-armed fleets. Most people don't know about this, but for example, did you know that plowing the waters of the Persian Gulf right now are two Allied attack forces with 45 warships flying the flags of the United States, Britain, the Netherlands, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, Turkey, Singapore, South Korea, New Zealand, and Australia? Well, if this doesn't look like a big-time resumption of the Cold War, it is, in fact, pushing military spending to fantastic new heights. Believe me, you are going to pay for it. And you didn't hear the cost of NATO mentioned in the presidential debates last night. The countries belonging to NATO are in first place. Their combined spending led by the U.S. accounts for 70% of all the military spending in the world. You know, between us, this is one great tragedy. Just look where your tax dollars are going. Drone warfare, naval armadas, atomic weapons. And to think that this was the country that gave the world so many brilliant, peaceful inventions, Edison's light bulb, which turned night into day all over the world, people all over the world loved the United States for that, the airplane, movies, the phonograph, and how about 1,000 medical ideas to save lives, all from the United States. I mean, can you imagine what America could do if it was not controlled by the military-industrial complex? And if you don't think that's the case, follow the money. See who gets what. See the Pentagon getting 53% of every tax dollar. Well, by the way, if you're interested in buying the NATO book, The Globalization of NATO, check out the Clarity Press website on the Internet. Yeah, I'm a publicist for this book, but I wouldn't be backing it if I didn't think it's an illuminating work on how NATO has transformed itself from a defensive organization that was never going to go further than Germany into a military strike force out to control the world and the world's energy resources. NATO, we don't need it. Let's abolish it. I'm sure we're brought. Good night to every one of you.
Thank you, Sherwood. And have
you're
a great
welcome.
Night.
You too.
Now it's time for our daily civics lesson. Today's topic, constitutional checks and balances. There are three branches in the United States government as established by the Constitution. First, the legislative branch makes the law. Second, the executive branch executes the law. Last, the judicial branch interprets the law. Each branch has an effect on the other. Well, you've got your impeachment power and your power to declare war and your power to initiate constitutional amendments. And then you've got your veto power and revenue bills and overrides and appointments and check this, check that. Right. Come here. This is my last day anyway. Tomorrow I'm going to swim to Canada if I can find the river and get me this rheumatism looked at and an eye checkup and maybe a heart transplant. If they've got any, they'll fit an American body. Listen, this is the way it is. This is the world. This is reality. Get over it, get around it, or get used to it. If the president wants to bomb some country or kill some people, he does it. If the military or the police or anyone in government wants to put some people in jail, they do it. If the CIA or the FBI or the Pentagon wants to do something but they don't think you'll like it, they tell the newspapers and TV news and radio to lie to you, and then they do it. And you work your nine jobs to pay for all this, and if you don't like it and you want to do something about it, but you're afraid if you do something about it, something bad will happen to you or your kids, or you'll lose your nine jobs, and then where would you be? But you do it anyway, wondering when will the guys in black come visit you and cut off your electricity and your arms and your legs. And you wonder, are they even going to cut off my, you know? I think I heard where they cut off other people's, you know. And you're watching and wondering, and they're standing around watching you wonder and worry, and then you realize these guys are very, very good. They already did it.
Do we believe what we believe because we've studied, held them in our hands, rolled them around, and decided? Or was it because we heard it on the TV from some person being paid to deliver the message? It's been a long road. From a stolen election to a government planned attack on September 11, 2001. To two invasions based on lies, based on power, based on money. To a murdered senator, the one standing in their way who would not be moved. We didn't want it to come. We marched, we emailed, we sang, we wrote, we got arrested. But it came anyway, and it's still here. The new American dream is a yellow ribbon free zone. We do not support the troops. The troops are not defending our freedom. They are thugs for the empire. Hoorah! We heard all about putting a boot up their ass from Toby Keith. He's a brave man to encourage other men to kill men, women, and children for no reason. Yeah, the real patriots were the Dixie Chicks. We all know that now. Protesters protect our freedom. That's the truth. Think Cynthia McKinney and Cindy Sheehan, not George Bush and John McCain. A hero does not drop bombs on people who are trying to live their lives. Come on, teachers, priests, ministers, coaches, parents, please start telling the truth. We can handle the truth. In fact, without the truth, we cannot live. We will die. Slowly. And then all at once. Will collapse, and that'll be that. It'll be over. A dusty pile of rubble and ho-hos and lies. We need a new dream, something real and solid, something to believe in. Truth in our history books, bread on the table of the poor. We have many heroes from which to draw inspiration. People who gave and are giving their lives to the troops. Patriots, if you will. Saints. Hard workers. Whatever you want to call them. They're there. They've always been there, even if we don't see them. Even if they're not famous. They don't give a damn about that. They're driven by something inside of them. And we can draw hope from the absolute fact that that same thing is inside all of us. People like Franz Schagerstatter, Sophie Scholl, Philip Berrigan, Daniel Berrigan, Dorothy Day, Frank Cordero, Deborah Sweet, Carl Cabot, Helen Woodson, the Plowshares Movement, the Nuclear Resistor, Eileen Fleming, Sam Smith, Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett. This message and this show are brought to you by the good folks at World News Trust, the Spiritual UN, author James Boomey, the former Rock Creek Free Press, and those individuals who've contributed over the past 20 months so that we can bring you the New American Dream Radio Show. If you'd like to become an advertiser or supporter, please contact me, Chuck Gregory, at CWG Services. You can find me at cwgservices.com or email me, cwg@cwgservices.com. Thanks also go out to the many guests who've taken the time to visit with us over these months. And thanks to you. Thank you for listening.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. It's getting into hunting season, talking about hunting season, finding scratchy socks for hunting. And just like he does every fall, Paul Larson sent his anti-hunting letter to the editor of the Wednesday Miracle. He knows it won't stop hunting, but, well, yes, he does. He knows he will. Maybe not this year, but maybe next. Larson always starts out the letter with that Steinbeck quote, the one he says somebody should graffiti up above the front door to Gander Mountain or Cabela's or Shields. Ever see a cock pheasant all stiff and beautiful? Ever feather drawed and painted? And even his eyes drawed in pretty, and bang! You pick him up, bloody and twisted, and you spoiled something better than you. John Steinbeck, The Grapes of Wrath.
The 10-Point Norwegian by Paul Larson. Recently, six hunters were killed in Wisconsin, and another is now headed off to prison for life. Well, to start, I don't like hunters. They kill when they don't need to. When I see a bunch out in the field in their bright orange dunce caps, I try to honk and then flip them a bird while they raise their shotguns in salute. I used to be a hunter. My dad took me pheasant hunting back in the 60s. He was from South Dakota and had hunting in his blood. I bought an Ithaca 12-gauge with a ribbed sight with my own money. And then I really got hooked on duck hunting somewhere in the 70s. Ducks and geese fascinated me. I think because they came from somewhere else. They were migrating, passing through. The pheasants of me had only been, just been here. But then one day, I downed a hen mallard and a slough. Cornered her, tried to kill her off by holding her head underwater. I thought to myself, how stupid is this? For one, trying to drown a duck, we could be here all day. And secondly, trying to kill this bird, for what damned reason? So, I let her up. She swam away to die some other day, some other way. And I walked away, headed toward the same. Threw the Ithaca in the swamp, or sold it, or left it in the trunk of my car, I forget which. I heard that later, my high school group of friends would joke about pre-Doc Larson and post-Doc Larson. I don't see them anymore. They were so pre-Doc. Yeah, I was 100 once. A dumb guy. I probably still am. Dumb guys are the last to know. I've seen deer hung up in the front yard of somebody's home in town while little kids walk past on their way to school. I've seen hunters gloating over dead deer in the field, big brain-dead grins on their faces. I've heard measured defenses of hunting from guys who really should know better. And I've seen the hunting channel, really big, really, really dumb guys whispering, pointing toward the bear or deer that they're about to kill for no reason. Then later, going up and petting the dead animal like they just loved it so much they just had to kill it. There's some sick psychology to hunting. Harvesting, they call it. You see something beautiful, majestic, but just beyond your reach, so you kill it. But there it is. You own it. Put it on your wall, and it's yours. Like the silver Hummer in the drive or Mary Jane from the cheerleading squad upstairs boiling bologna. And you bathe in the afterglow in your new basement den, your feet propped up in just your orange socks, watching football on a screen the size of Vermont. No wonder this country won't last much longer. It's probably a good thing. It's like when God handed out brains, the line was much longer than he anticipated. And after a point, he still had the whole Midwestern United States to do. So he said, hey, guys, all I got left are these orange mittens and these camouflage socks. Oh, sorry, but they're pretty cool, right? See, you put them on, I can't see you. Yeah, that looks great. Yeah, no, really. And the dumb guy scooped up the orange and camouflage hats and pants and coats and said, let's get her done. No idea what it meant. Over Thanksgiving one year, my wife, son, daughter, and mother-in-law and I slumped toward South Dakota, central South Dakota, to my brother-in-law, the realtor's place. On the way, I spotted this enlightened billboard. South Dakota rejects animal activists. Fur, fish, and livestock are our economy. By the way, that's our economy, that's both spelled with A-R-E. Down the road a bit, like Burma Shave on a metal hospital front lawn. The United States rejects human life advocates. Bullets, bombs, caskets are our economy. Oh, I'm so proud to be an American. No, I'm kidding. A while back, there was a photo in the paper of another Wisconsin hunter. This one's still kicking. He bagged a 28-point buck. Remember the song about the 30-point buck? No relation. The hunter says in the article, as he holds the animal's antlers for the photographer, as the deer's eyes hang half-closed and the tongue lolls out the side of the mouth, he really, seriously, feels kind of bad about taking such a beautiful creature from the woods. No, really. Don't believe it, folks. He's a dumb guy wearing orange clothes with a deer head in his hands. He'll say anything to stay out of prison.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO hunters sneaking around in the woods are about average.
And that's it for this episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We'd like to thank you for listening. And once again, I'd like to thank those who are sponsoring our show, worldnewstrust.com, thespiritualun.org, and June2508.com. That last is the book for author James Boomey. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Oh.